T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Hey, it's Jim Miller. How are you?
Jim Miller. Thank you for calling, man. I'm doing great. Yourself?
I'm good. You're in Minnesota?
I am, yeah. Minneapolis.
I love Minnesota. Well, I used to go up past Cass Lake, a little lake up there in the summer.
Oh, really? Right on. I just got back from a week of vacation off Big Sandy Lake last week.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember there was a place called Bemidji that we used to go to.
Yeah, yeah, that's up there. That's up north, yep.
Yeah, it's just God's country, man.
Where are you at right now? Where do you live?
I'm in L.A. right now.
I moved here from L.A.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, 23 years ago. I can't believe I've lasted here this long.
Power move.
I can't tell you how stoked I am to talk to you, man. I mean, Jim Miller, esteemed and award-winning journalist, best-selling author, host of Origins on radio.com that you can download and subscribe to now, or Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your shows. But your latest installment is Almost Famous turns 20, and it is one of, if not my favorite movie of all time, dude. Seriously.
Yeah, it seems to be the case for a lot of people, and I couldn't believe that it was going to be 20 years since it was released.
So I can't either. The time just flew by, 22 decades.
Crazy, right?
It is.
So it just seemed like too good an opportunity to try and get the band back together, so to speak. And I was so fortunate that Cameron and Kate and Billy and everybody, even Peter Frampton and Nancy Wilson, all hopped aboard for this podcast.
I am so jealous and green with envy that you got to sit down with probably my favorite cast. It could be the best cast in any film ever committed to celluloid. I mean, it's close to my heart because the rock and roll subject matter, obviously, following the exploits of young upstart writer William Miller. No relation, I would imagine.
No.
A fake character.
Only in spirit.
Right. Patterned after Cameron Crowe, who wrote and directed this masterpiece. And you did get the band back together. How was that, getting Cameron and the cast? I mean, magical, I'd imagine.
It really was. I'll tell you, for one specific reason above any. I mean, it was great to see these people and sit down with them and stuff. But the other thing was to literally be with them and to watch their faces. When this is the movie that for so many of them was, the big deal.
Kind of a springboard, yeah.
They still carry around them. And, I told Cameron that when I was getting together with Frances McDormand, and he surprised her at the end of our interview. And I got to tell you, the way that they hugged and the way that they talked, it's like, there's a lot of movies that we see in the theaters, we watch in our homes, mm-hmm. and they're great and they're all feel good movies. And then you hear from the director and the star hated each other. The two
coaches, right.
They had an affair and then they never spoke to each other again after week six and, all this stuff. And like this one, it's real. I mean, these people really enjoy. Kate Hudson tells a couple stories. I mean, Jimmy Fallon tells a couple stories too, but like they were going out at night together. They were getting in trouble together. They really bonded. And so I think to your point, I think it's an amazing cast. And one of the things that was interesting for me was to get into the whole casting situation. And I know we've made some news about this recently, but, I went through with Cameron and originally, believe it or not, he was thinking this was going to be Meryl Streep, Brad Pitt, and Natalie Portman.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
As you can appreciate, that's a totally different movie.
It is, totally.
I'm not saying it wouldn't have worked.
Sure.
But, Cameron talks in the first episode about he spent 4 months working with Brad Pitt on this movie. This isn't like they met at a deli and they talked and Cameron says, hey, I'm doing this semi-autobiographical things about rock and roll, man. You want to be in it?
Yeah.
And Brett goes, no, I don't think so. They spent 4 months together.
Wow. And that's doing some research right there for the character.
And not to mention the fact that, like, Meryl Streep, I mean, instead of Frances McDormand, Natalie Portman instead of Kate Hudson, actually Sarah Polley. Cameron talks about he wanted Sarah Polley for the role.
Wow.
And Kate was originally supposed to be the sister.
No kidding, really?
No, so Sarah Polley dropped out. Kate said, I really want to play Penny Lane. Cameron at first says, I don't think so. I got somebody, you're not who I imagine.
Mm.
She auditioned for it. She won him over. She moved over, and then all of a sudden that created the opportunity for Zoe DeChanel.
For Zoe to step in as the sister.
So, it was really fun to go through all that. With Cameron, and I even interviewed the casting director, Gail Levin, it's kind of a cool sequence.
You know, the real Penny Lane, I didn't even know that she existed. I thought that was a made-up character. I know about Sweet Connie and Cynthia Plastercaster, Pamela DeBar with I'm With the Band, but I didn't know that Penny Trumbull was actually a real person.
Yeah, and I interviewed her too, and, she was like the big inspiration. I think that there were aspects of obviously the character that Cameron then fused from a couple other people, but she was certainly a big inspiration, and she was really great to talk about and talk with.
So you had Kate Hudson, Patrick Fugit, which was pretty much his first role ever, Francis, Billy Crudup, Jimmy Fallon, Jason Lee, Zoe Deschanel, but I'm sure that Philip Seymour Hoffman was sorely missed at this.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there are some great Philip Seymour Hoffman stories in this. And
I heard he didn't even have to audition for this.
Well, no, it was that he refused to read.
Oh, okay.
You got to get Philip Seymour Hoffman right, man. He was not going to come in and read. But Gail Levin tells a great story about his meeting with Cameron and Gail. And he was utterly brilliant. Do you want me to just give you a quick
Sure, I'd love to, yeah.
So big stars, they don't necessarily come in and like read like sides, what they're called, like parts of the script. But so he came in and he goes on this rant about on the way over, he had seen this American Express commercial billboard with Martin Scorsese on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like ranting about this and all this. And then they talk about the movie and then he leaves and Cameron says to Gail, the casting director, I don't know. It's just so hard because he wouldn't read. And she said, what are you talking about? He basically did better than that because his whole rant about
was Martin fully Scorsese, Lester Bangs. Yeah.
That's Lester Bangs, man. And Cameron goes, oh my God, that's how brilliant he is. Of course.
Wow.
Like, it's just so terrific. And, I think that was really cool. There was one other thing I wanted to mention real quick, which was, to your point about Patrick being like an unknown.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a 15-year-old kid in Salt Lake City who's basically skateboarding. And so he's talking with Cameron, and Cameron says to him, so, like, are you like into music? And Patrick goes, well, I have like a Chumbawamba CD. And Cameron goes, okay. He goes, well, do you listen to Led Zeppelin? And Patrick's response was, I'm not familiar with his work.
Oh no! Are you kidding me? This is unbelievable, man.
So I think that one of the great things that shows, though, about Cameron is, like, he could have voted him off the island right then.
Sure.
Right? I mean, it doesn't even Chumbawamba, and he thinks,
And thinks Led Zeppelin's a solo act.
he winds up deciding that he's going to go with Patrick, and he gives Patrick a stack of albums. Much like the stack
just,
that you see in the movie.
Just like the movie, yeah, sure.
Beach Boys, Joni Mitchell, whatever. And he looks at Patrick and he says, the next time I see you, I want this oozing out of you.
Wow.
I want all this oozing out of you. Patrick tells me, he said, he went back and, he was obviously so committed to the role, and as you could see.
Sure.
And, he pulled it off. But, that's a that's a big journey for a 15-year-old to go from Chumbawamba to, you know, the rabid music fan that he plays in the movie.
Especially for an unknown and a kid not even acting. I mean, the wide-eyed innocence that he brings to that role. I don't think you were talking about how Brad Pitt and Meryl Streep were talked about as and Billy Crudup and Frances McDormand's role, but I don't think anybody could have played that but Patrick, really.
I mean, they went, by the way, hundreds of people.
Really?
And while we're at it, let me just add one thing.
Okay.
You know, Almost Famous was Cameron Crowe's fourth movie.
Right.
His third movie was this little thing called Jerry Maguire.
Right.
Which was like this huge hit, right?
Blockbuster.
And so when you do Jerry Maguire, and it's one of Tom Cruise's best movies,
yeah,
and Cuba Gooding Jr. wins an Academy Award, and you're nominated for a script, and it does phenomenal box office, you basically, I mean, Hollywood, it's like they come to your house and they give you this gold card and they go, okay, well, you can do whatever you want next.
Yes.
And Cameron Crowe could have done like a big franchise movie. He could have done anything with any cast, any actor, you know, around would have done anything with him. And instead, he decided, instead of going big, he was going to go small. And he was going to, he'd been working on Almost Famous, the script, for 10 years.
Right.
And he decided to use all that capital that he got from Jerry Maguire to make this, you know, somewhat small movie. And I think that's just super cool.
That speaks volumes about who Cameron Crowe is. I've been a fan of his since, you know, since the beginning, Fast Times, Ridgemont High. He's probably my favorite writer-director of all time. And for this movie, he just wrote a love letter to what made him who he is today.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I mean, the songs, let's talk about the music. The songs paired perfectly with scenes in this thing. Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatter's, to the Rain song, to Joni Mitchell and the backstage Penny Russell scene, to Burn, Deep Purple at the Topeka party. But it's Tiny Dancer. This is my favorite scene probably of any movie I've ever seen, on the bus after the Russell acid trip. I Am a Golden God scene. And it shows that music is the great healer, where they all get back on the bus, they're all pissed off, and the sing-along starts. But it's when the chorus kicks in, Hold Me Closer, Tiny Dancer, and William says, I have to go home. And then the next line of the song, Count the headlights on the highway, and she goes, you are home. I mean, that kills me every time I see it. Even when I hear the song, that scene plays in my head. It's that powerful.
Me too, man. And guess what?
I got goosebumps right now. What?
By the way, you did a great job of deconstructing that scene.
Oh, well, thanks, man.
But let me just say something to you. That scene is my favorite moment in the movie as well. That moment in that scene.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to Kate about it. I'm talking to Cameron about it. And guess what?
What?
Cameron Crowe won the Academy Award for Best Screenplay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he worked on that script for 10 years. And that line, I am home, was not in the script.
Come on. You're telling me she improvised that?
Dude, are you glad you have me on?
Yes, I am blown away.
One of the things that you will continually find if you listen to this podcast and you think more about Almost Famous,
right,
is that Cameron Crowe, as a filmmaker, creates an atmosphere where all sorts of things happen because actors trust him and because he gives actors the time. Somebody else who had worked on a script for 10 years, they will say, how dare you not say what the line is or whatever. I mean, obviously they'll shoot the line.
Sure.
But the point is that Cameron created enough. Kate said that line totally came up, you know, after they had done probably like 20 takes or something.
Oh, wow.
Something else. And so I think that also speaks directly to the kind of a filmmaker Cameron is. Can I give you one other anecdote?
Please, yes.
Do we have a minute? Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man.
So Philip Seymour Hoffman is like, that's the deep end of the pool.
Sure.
In terms of like talent and like a force of nature. I mean, he was really sick the entire time he filmed in this movie, like 102 fever, was throwing up, had in between takes would like wipe off like flop sweat from his face and stuff. Anyway, he's shooting a scene with Patrick, and the lights in this particular scene are really in Patrick's eyes, and they're kind of like blinding him almost. But Patrick's 15.
Yeah.
He's going to do what
he's going to roll with it. Sure.
You know, the great cinematographer, John Toll, set up and what Cameron's doing. And all of a sudden they're doing a scene and Philip Seymour Hoffman yells cut. Now, you know what it's like if an actor yelled cut on some other director's movies? I mean, they'd be like literally under the guillotine.
Of course,
like
escorted seconds. Off the set, yeah.
Without a doubt.
Sure.
And instead, so Patrick tells me the story, and Philip Seymour Hoffman says, cut. He goes, listen, you guys got to change the eye, can't change the lights. You're blind in this kid. He can't even open his eyes. And, you know, cut it out. So he like totally puts his hands on the steering wheel.
Whoa.
And obviously, John Toll wasn't happy about it. But here's the moment. Instead of like Cameron Crowe saying to him, how dare you cut, and the lights will stay as they are because that's where I want them and John wants them.
Sure.
Cameron Crowe goes, you know what? Thank you, Philip. Okay, let's take a beat, everybody. John, you want to look at the lighting? And Patrick and Philip, let's just come over here with me and let's just do a reset. And it's all good. Don't worry about it. I mean, those, I just find, like, particularly when you're really obsessed with a movie and you're thinking about every single nanosecond, like that kind of moment is just like, it's a Rorschach test. It's a great way of understanding who Cameron Crowe is, not just as a writer, not just as a filmmaker, but as a human being.
Exactly, man, that he would just give carte blanche to you know, a highly decorated and talented actor like Philip Seymour Hoffman. And yeah, you're right. You're right. That's true. Let's set it back up and do it the right way. Yeah.
It's pretty intense.
I'm talking to Jim Miller, and it's my pleasure to have you on with me, man. It's the Origins Podcast, Almost Famous turns 20. You can find it on radio.com, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows, and celebrating one of the greatest movies ever made, in my top three, at least, could be my number one. I can't gauge him. But to me, it's amazing that this was not a big box office success when it came out. It's been a cult classic over the years.
Well, first of all, shame on the movie business for changing so much that, you know, movies like this that didn't start out great. I don't even know if Almost Famous gets made anymore. I mean,
a shame? That's just totally sad.
But the truth is that, can you imagine now? So they do this movie, they're feeling really good about it, and the movie comes out, and the opening weekend, another movie opens called The Exorcist. Revisited.
Oh, the reissue, the rematch. Yes, with the extra scenes in it. Okay.
And it just blew them out of the water.
Oh,
it
my just, God.
And so Cameron gets this call on a Monday saying, like, you know, basically it's a bomb. And, you know, the cast is like so dejected and everything else. And sure enough, though, it's great because this movie, you know, Cameron says at the very beginning, I made a point of asking him, look, I'm not going to ask you a Sophie's Choice question, like, is this your favorite movie you've ever done?
Yeah.
But I said, you know, when people come up to you and talk to you about your movies, he said, it's always Almost Famous. It's, you know, more and more, it's Almost Famous. And that's saying a lot.
It's speaking volumes to me because it's such a special, from the heart, movie that connects everyone under the umbrella of music. Like, the best ending line ever in this flick, in anyone that I can think of. So, Russell, what do you love about music? And he says, to begin with, everything.
Say anything. I mean, Jerry Maguire was, I mean, there are many people who think Jerry Maguire was Tom Cruise's best film. And, you know, you're talking about one of the biggest stars of the past quarter century.
Sure.
And if that's one of his best films, I mean, you know, it was so tragic that Kelly Preston died the other day.
Yeah, 57, so young.
Everybody's talking about, you know, looking at her scenes in Jerry Maguire.
She's so good in that.
Unbelievable tour de force.
Yes.
And so beautiful and so powerful. And you know, so if that's the competition and Almost Famous is still able to rise above that, so to speak, I mean, that's saying a lot.
It really does, man. And the fact that you've got the whole cast and Cameron back together and they still have this heartfelt connection between them 20 years later is saying a lot for what you did for this podcast.
And Frampton and Nancy Wilson. Do we have 1 second?
Yeah, I'd love to hear about those two.
So you know the Golden God scene, right?
Oh, yeah.
Golden God. So right before they're about to shoot that, Billy says to Nancy Wilson, hey, give it up, man. Did you ever take acid? And she said, well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, back in the 60s. Yeah, got to confess. And he goes, well, what was it like? And she said, you know, it's like electric bolts going through your body and even extending out into your hands. And if you watch... And
that's Billy what he does in the scene.
Exactly. And that came from a conversation that he had with Nancy.
Right before he shot it.
I just love things like that. And Peter Frampton, I mean, he's so... He even got to play, you know, the roadie from Humble...
Humble Pie, sure.
in that. But he told a couple Cameron stories that are just amazing. And I also had Nancy and Peter talk about the fact that there was this thing before production started called Rock School. And they put
I read about this.
Play guitar.
Yeah.
And they taught Jason how to be a lead singer. And they taught the whole group and everybody about being in front of crowds. And they had these big crowds that they did for Rock School. And it was like, it was 6 weeks of like intensive immersion into how to be a rock and roll star.
Talk about baptism by fire, huh? I mean, that's awesome.
I know, but I told Peter Frampton, I said, listen, you know, they have these like fantasy baseball camps where you can go and like, you know, learn to be a major leaguer and pretend you're one.
Sure.
You guys should do that. Rock camp, man. It's like, I'll pay for that.
Yeah. A whole lot of people would. Totally, man.
So fun.
Well, such great stories. And you can hear all of this plus more with the whole cast and Cameron with Jim Miller. 5 episodes, right? Binge-worthy on radio.com or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. Almost Famous turns 20. Host of Origins, I'm talking to Jim Miller. And, dude, it's been nothing but a pleasure. I've had goosebumps the whole conversation.
Well, I can't – listen, it's I can't thank you enough. I could tell right away that this is a movie that was important to you. And that's why I did it, because there are so many people out there that love this movie. And I just hope they like it. And also, not to be a shameless plugster, but I've gotten some – rare photos and audiograms that we put together. I'm on Twitter at Jim Miller, or Instagram at James Andrew Miller 18, and we're posting them for people to see. And a lot of them have not been seen before. So if you're an Almost Famous fan, you know, please come and check it out.
All right, I'm going there now. That's killer.
I hope that doesn't sound too icky.
Not even, man. No, I appreciate it, dude. But thanks for all of the addresses and pointing us in the right direction where to go. Almost Famous turns 20, Origins, on radio.com or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. Jim Miller, thank you very much.
Thank you, Remy.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.